everyone, and welcome back to Couch Confidentials, the podcast where we dig into the real challenges of MarTech, especially customer data. And I hear today's topic something to do around privacy. Anyway, I'm your host, Matthew Niederberger, and today we're tackling a topic that keeps businesses on their toes, or at least it should, privacy compliance. Our guest today is Vaibhav Antil, co-founder and CEO of Privado AI, a company helping organizations build privacy-first products by detecting and preventing compliance risks at the code level. With regulations tightening and privacy expectations shifting, businesses are under more pressure than ever to manage data responsibly. Privado released its State of Privacy 2025 report at the end of last year, exposing how companies are handling privacy and where many are still falling short. If you think your business is in the clear, the findings might make you think again. Today, we'll discuss what's actually happening inside companies trying to meet privacy standards, how technology can help without just adding more bureaucracy, and whether businesses see privacy as a necessity or an afterthought. Let's get into it. Hey, Vaibhav, thank you for joining Couch Confidentials. I want to thank you because we've been planning this one for quite some time now, ever since the State of Privacy report came out. But before we get into details, I'd love to hear a little bit more about you. Could you kind of do a quick introduction?
Yeah, thanks, Matthew, for having me on the podcast. Follow you on LinkedIn was really, I really appreciate and was excited to see you covering the State of Website Privacy report. So my name is Vaibhav. I am based out of New York, originally grew up in India, entered into privacy from product management, was working in a large media publishing house where we had a music streaming app that I was managing. And I actually worked very closely on the monetization problem where you had a lot of free users and how you could use growth and product strategies to, you know, convert them into paid. Yeah. So very well, accustomed to all the marketing tools that got integrated and then also on the monetization side, and got an opportunity to work around GDPR compliance, and then saw this huge pain point where when privacy teams are supposed to make the company compliant, but all the risk gets generated into different business unit, be it product, marketing, engineering. So they don't really have good control on the things that generate risk, but they ultimately own the risk in some sense. So started Privado almost 4 years back. And what we do is we help companies build privacy governance in their digital experiences. So they have a website, mobile app, CTV app, and all the tools that sit on top. So especially in our conversation, all the MarTech, AdTech tools that sit on top, helping them comply. So that's a little bit about me. Happy to be here.
It's amazing because I had a few podcasts now and discussions with people from the web analytics world, and that's where my roots are. So I started out in digital analytics, and I have to say, I think I found four people right now. They've all moved into privacy. They were the biggest spokespeople that I could ever imagine in an industry around collecting data. And now they're all for privacy. What was your kind of your personal biggest driver to get into privacy? Because when I see it on the work floor, and I know I'm kind of oversimplifying right now, you'll have someone standing by the water cooler from privacy and a marketer coming to get a cup of water. Just kind of, it's like they don't want to acknowledge the fact that they need to deal with privacy. But you're going full on. It's very admirable. And it's the same way I think about these other people that I know.
Yeah. So I think it's interesting because, kind of when I was, even back in the day when I was in product management, especially back in India, we didn't have a privacy framework or even a law at that point of time. We had something kind of old, some new law has finally come up. But, we were trying to utilize a lot of data collected from, observing from user device to make certain decisions in terms of discounting. And, as I reflect back, I understand, if that happens to the user itself, and if they're unaware, of course, that's fine. But as they get aware, they start to lose trust on a brand, or they start to, stop doing business with the brand. So I think that's what we've seen over time. Privacy is one of those things which is the hardest to do, because security is something which is easy to do in the sense that you can define it very well. Hey, you have data and you want to protect it. It should not go to someone, supposed not to get it, be it a hacker or an internal person. Privacy gets hard because it's beyond just protecting the data. It's all about the use of data, and it's tied to the end user experience, right? So I think fundamentally coming from a growth background as well, I do feel if you have that angle in your growth plans, if you have the privacy angle, then you can actually grow really well without, upsetting your core user base. I feel it's very similar to like a food brand having a nutrition of like, what are the labels, ingredients, right? Is it a clean brand in terms of the ingredients they choose? Or is it like a brand which has, you know, kind of inorganic product? So I think privacy is one of those things, because it's that list of ingredients for your digital products that your end customers are trusting you on. And then, you know, from there on buying you and building a good relationship. So I think that's where my motivation around privacy is. A lot of things happen today for humans because we have digitized, and those things, if they go back to paper-based processes, will not work. And privacy is one of the core things for this digital experience to work.
Yeah, definitely. But it's still, I mean, it's 2025, and I still see it kind of, it's so hard to see the gray area. It's either people are for privacy and they'll do everything. I mean, I don't want to say purists, but they'll do everything to protect the user. And then there's the other camp that just says, hey, give me all your data. But that's kind of what you try to expose, I should say, in your state of privacy report. I mean, this is the first one you did, right?
Yes, this is our first big comprehensive one.
And for you personally, when you were going through the results, what was the first thing that you kind of first piece of data that you saw and you're like, wow, that I never expected that?
I would say actually two data points. I always knew on the US side of the house, because we don't have in America, in US, like we have state regulators, but we don't have like a federal law. It's also opt out. I definitely thought in US we will have more non-compliance. I thought Europe will do significantly better. Before we started the report, I had this internal wager. It's like Europe is going to be sub 50%, US is going to be more than 70%. So while in US we were spot on, it's about 76%. Europe ended up being 74%. So that was really surprising. The second biggest surprise, I thought, again, that was kind of something which was a contradiction. I thought most of these websites would be like mostly non-compliant and, you know, will not be doing anything. But we found things in other order. So most of these websites were blocking a lot of scripts, which means they were actually sacrificing data collection, revenue, analytics, but were missing some of the scripts, some of the cookies, which means someone in marketing and privacy collaborated at some point of time. I did all the work, started blocking things, and over time, new scripts got added and their website became non-compliant. So that was another insight for me, which was surprising, that companies have actually put in both money in terms of buying solution, implementing them, but also they must have lost revenue because of that, right? Because you're going for privacy, so you're losing some of the revenue, but you're still non-compliant. So that's
Are they losing revenue or attributable revenue? I think that's...
Yeah, mostly... Yeah, I think less revenue, mostly attribution, right? Like not in terms of, in some sense.
They're probably over-evaluating their brand awareness and all this data coming in as direct. Well, of course, you're not tracking that they're coming in from direct, but you know they can't attribute a purchase to any specific channel. But the report suggests that, you know, 75%, you had 76 in the US and 74 in Europe, that were non-compliant. I mean, what are you expecting for 2026, your tools on the market? Personally, I've seen more companies in the Netherlands actually, I mean, it's just, yeah, it's a small country, but still more companies becoming compliant. I'm really checking their websites and I have various tools for this from the outside in, and I don't see anything loading as soon as I don't click any banner. And a lot of these websites seem to be compliant. And I use these tools as kind of to get a foot in the door saying, hey, I noticed that your website is not compliant. So I would reach out to, but even that's getting harder. What are your thoughts around 2025? So that would show up in your 2026 report. Are you hopeful that companies are becoming more aware?
Yes, and we're doing a larger benchmarking exercise this time. So we're also going to run it for more, instead of a one-time scam, we're thinking of running it over like 6 months period so we can measure over time compliance. So there are two trends to watch out. There is a regulatory trend, which is mostly on the European side, wherein ICO, which is the UK regulator, is running a sweep of top 1,000 websites. So they're going to run scans.
Yeah. They're getting really active.
Yes, they might not find, but they will still send a notice, which is a lot of work. So I think regulatory, there is quite a bit of work on the European side. There's also some work done by nonprofits where they're doing exactly the same thing and, you know, either putting like a mass fine or a mass complaint or, you know, reaching out to companies. So I do feel the number should slightly improve. We are seeing that in our customer base as well. And people just, you know, trying to use some form of tool, be it there is an open source tool by the European Data Protection Board or they use Privado or something like that.
You're talking about None of Your Business, for example. Those kind of organizations.
Absolutely. Yeah. They're one of them. And then, of course, there's one in Netherlands as well, which is the consumer body. They had done quite a bit of cases. In US, that's a different. It's less to do with, I think, regulators. While the California AG famously is hiring right now a chief, I think, auditor. So for enforcement and investigation. But it's all in US, what I personally see is driven very heavily by litigation. Wherein there are these private law firms which are actually going onto websites, running a scan.
I've seen that. Yeah, I tried to reach out to one for an interview, but they're not coming back to me. But they have open databases where you can actually see their success rates on this litigation.
And they're running like old cases, so they're looking at SEPA, which is like an old wiretapping act, or VPPA, which is a Video Protection Privacy Act. So I think US is even more of a nuisance because they are actually utilizing and they're settling cases. So it's a lot of money wasted by companies. So I do think just from this momentum on website, this year we will see, hopefully we'll see much better numbers. Again, because I feel like the privacy and marketing teams already collaborated to fix it. It's just, you know, there are configurations that they didn't monitor and, you know, led to not compliance eventually.
Yeah. And when you, I mean, I really want to get into your solution, the Privado, you know, the privacy engineering part, but just to kind of get your thoughts around these organizations, you mentioned that the litigation is really, it's kind of probably become their own money stream in the US. Like I said, I found one company, one law firm, all they do is this kind of work, but whose responsibility is it? And It's a very complex question because if you look at digital landscapes, you have websites that you need to really dive deep into the technology that you're using to ensure that you're privacy compliant. And that's if you're self-built. I mean, if you're using a Shopify, how do you do that? But then you also have mobile apps, which gets even more complicated. And I follow this guy on YouTube, Fireship. It's a YouTube channel, a guy called Jeff. And he always makes fun about all these different front-end frameworks that constantly get developed. You've got TikTok just dropped one with links. Then there's Vue. Then there's React. There's Flutter. There's React Native. There's Svelte. I mean, Russ, I can imagine that companies are just at some point confused at how to get privacy right in all the applications that are available on the web, be it web or mobile or even backend. I mean, what are your thoughts on responsibility then? Is it the company's responsibility?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, ultimately, because the end user is trusting the company to give, you know, interact with them and give them their data. Yeah. So it's 100% the company's responsibility internally in the company. I see it very similar to any other function. So while marketing will put the scripts, the governance of that ends up being a responsibility of the privacy team, if they have one, or the legal team, if they have one. If not, then maybe marketing is wearing both the hats. But ultimately, if you look at even security for that matter, right, you have engineers writing code, but security owning the responsibility of at least finding the vulnerabilities and then, you know, embedding all the workflows in the engineer's workflow to find security vulnerability. So I feel privacy's job is similar. Ultimately, they own the privacy risk, at least discovery of that. And then, of course, remediation only marketing can do. And then they need to provide tools to marketers so they can, you know, safely market as they take decisions on Google Tag Manager or a high touch or a Rudder stack or on the web dev side. They need to have their own scanners to give them back feedback. And those scanners have to be vetted by privacy teams so they know, you know, these scanners work and, you know, solve their use case. And then marketers can confidently market or retarget or, you know, put ads on their website or onboard a new ad tech vendor, right? So I do feel it already happens. Like if you do a 5-figure deal with a CDP or a 6-figure deal with a CDP, you'll go through all the internal security assessment and a data protection agreement, right? Yeah. The only thing which is not happening is like actually checking it, you know, actually seeing what data goes there. I feel that's what privacy engineering is. That's what we do at Privado as well. On the user-facing side, it's mostly around data sharing and consent validation. But if you move to backend, then it's also about use of data and AI models and stuff like that.
No, absolutely. And in your discussions with these companies, when you're going through these assessment phases, just out of curiosity, who are the people that are actually contacting you? Is it the engineers or are it representatives from the privacy departments or legal even?
Yeah, mostly legal and privacy because they feel the pain, the most pain, right? Again, like their job is, I feel, is hard in the sense they don't create, they don't control who adds a script. But yeah, when that script gets added and a SEPA claim comes to them or a regulator notice comes to them, they have to stop all the work they were doing and focus on it, right? So they feel the real pain. And then their job is to enable. Their job is enabling the marketing team to have, you know, getting these real-time alerts back whenever they make a mistake. So it's mostly the legal and privacy team. Some small digital shops, we have marketing team as well coming in.
Some ethical marketers and ethical engineers.
Absolutely.
So before we start recording, I was telling you about a discussion that I had earlier this week with the guys from Dojo AI. And the premise that they had around building their solution was to put the marketer back into the role of marketing. And I mean, if you look at all marketing technology these days, we're expecting marketers to know about APIs, data models, mapping data from one source to another. So it gets very complex and it really pulls them out of their comfort zone and into a position where they may not feel at home and mistakes could be made affecting data quality. And I think the same thing happens with privacy in this case. We talk about, you know, the privacy teams contacting you to say, hey, we need a solution that at the source will help us control privacy so that it's no longer an afterthought and that the marketers no longer need to worry about it or lose sleep over it overnight. They can just do their work knowing that anything that they do, any action that they take will be on the foundation of proper privacy. And I think that's the solution that Bravado delivers, right? With through privacy engineering.
Absolutely. And I'll give an example for that, right? So for example, if you ask the marketer about Facebook pixel, right? So famously in the EU, you have cookies and you have to categorize them as strictly essential, analytics, advertising, right? There could be a marketer who doesn't have the privacy context and say, no, Facebook is strictly essential. It's like absolutely essential for me to on my website. That's how I can do marketing, right? So if you let the marketing team take this decision, these things can happen. And they're genuine things, right? They're not the privacy experts. So that's why you need tools and processes in order for them. You don't want them to make these decisions. You want them to enable them so they can do their job and you give them the right recommendation. That's kind of what we do at Bravado for both marketers, engineers, like depending on who's there, you know, what's the end use case for the client.
Yeah. So can you kind of run us through, let's say we close a deal and we're going to implement Bravado. What am I looking at? I know that as a company, I want to secure privacy at the code level. And I have a website and I have a mobile application and I've got some server-side data coming in, let's say into a CDP or a data warehouse. Where does Bravado fit in? And I mean, what kind of processes are you looking at when to get this up and running?
Yeah, thanks for asking that question, Matthew. So Bravado, we have like multiple entry points, as I was saying, like, you know, we're scanning for any digital experience that a company is building. So for anything which is user-facing, a website or a mobile app, right, we can just scan from outside in, which is we can think of, like in retail, there used to be a concept of a mystery shopper. When someone go in and audit your customer experience, Bravado is like a mystery privacy user, which will, or like a regulator in that sense, it'll go in on your website and act like a user. Complete user, the website or the app can never differentiate, and then take all the privacy choices on the website, fill up a form, you know, sign up, log in. And then what we do at the backend is figure out, hey, as the user took all these, you know, choices around consent or data, was consent really honored? So did you start to, you know, store cookies or fire pixels? Mm-hmm. And then was there any sensitive data leak? So that's one type of scanning that we do, which is kind of what we like to call is more reactive, but it's very focused on risk. Like you don't want that litigation firm, which you mentioned, to get, you know, to do open your console and figure that out. So you run a weekly or a daily scan with Bravado and then you're able to eliminate all of this risk. So this is more reactive. Just puts marketing teams and privacy teams, you know, take them to a place where they become compliant and then they can regularly find issues. The problem with this is, I mean, it's really good because it's fast, no implementation. Yeah. Within minutes, you go in, You have the first scan, you start fixing things.
It's a great lead magnet too, I guess.
Absolutely, it is. But the long term, you want to move early on. So you want to detect before things go live and you don't want to find things in your production environment. So that's where we have different scanners. So we have two types of scanners for that. One is a code scanner, which basically looks at the source code itself, which is when your engineers are making decision for a website and app on what data gets collected, what third party gets integrated, where data flows, we will scan that. And if you look at someone puts a new code change, someone adds a new script, the moment that happens, we create an alert. So that's more proactive. And we have something similar for marketing platforms.
So the code one is actually before you compile the kind of the end program. Okay, wow.
Yeah, left to right. So someone will add a new script. They will create a pull request or a PR to push it to product or to actually do the compiling. Yeah. Before the compiling even happens, you create an alert and stop it. And we have something similar for Google Tag Manager, HiTouch. So that's basically scanning your things on the server side, right? So that's something, again, another risk is with these CDPs, you don't really have anything client-side, so you can't scan for it because data will go to HiTouch or in this case, Google Tag Manager or TLM, and then you can just do sharing from these platforms. So that's another type of scanner. So I think implementation-wise, the quickest one that we go in and show value is web and app scanning. Companies reduce risk. Then on the automation side, long-term efficiency is code scanning and all these marketing platform scanning.
Okay. Yeah, the source approach is, I love advocating that because you're absolutely correct in saying it's not even useful to scan this data in the CDP. It's already been transmitted. So you've already kind of overstepped a certain boundary. And there are a few CDPs out there that do kind of data quality checks on the data that comes in, but never privacy checks. And I was recently talking to another, category colleague, the CDP colleague of mine. And we were discussing this topic saying, you know, how do you improve data quality? And it's, these tools that you have in the CDPs, in my eyes, they're worthless. You really need to go to the source. Avvo is a great example of that. AVO, where they do this data, they do the data quality checks on the data at the moment that it's collected and flag it if anything goes wrong. And I think you're right that for privacy, if it is on production, it's just too late.
Absolutely.
So another, you mentioned a Google Tag Manager, you manage HiTouch. What about these third-party tags? I mean, when you do the Google Tag Manager or if you go through the code and you see something for, let's say, AdWords, is this something that Privado would pick up?
Absolutely. So any tag scripts that are integrated into the code, we will pick up automatically. The ones that are the most interesting one we see sometimes is there's one JavaScript which has like multiple, like an analytics tag and a marketing tag. So that will become like a flag back. Like it is not the best practice because when you would ask your CMP to block it, you can't block it because it has both analytics and marketing tags in one single script, in one first party script. So we would pick up on those things as well.
But how does, so what is the next step? Let's say Privado has identified and who is the, let's say the daily or weekly user of Privado. You've done the scan, you've identified the potential risks in the code. What happens then? Does it kind of get isolated or is it possible to isolate by someone using your user interface to say, hey, we only transmit this code if it's been matched to this level of consent?
Yeah, absolutely. So that's kind of why we have both kind of scanners. One is static, one is dynamic. So you can, you know, match the signals with something which is running in production and something which is kind of in the on the source code side, which is early. So yeah, it is possible. Our usual users are, again, people from privacy and legal. And then so they use it mostly for everything, including from documentation and finding risk. And then every issue that gets created gets assigned to someone, either depending on the ownership. So Tag Manager, any issue that originates because of Tag Manager gets assigned to marketing. Any issue that gets originated because of a first-party script that is actually developed internally gets assigned to the web dev team. So there is a website owner, and then they can further assign it internally to actually fix it. And that's kind of how it gets worked. So and then you're running continuously these scans and, you know, hopefully preventing things whenever a new PR is made.
Of course, implementation varies per company, but with the clients that you've had so far, I know you can't name them, but have you seen things get really out of control or have you really knocked over a hornet's nest, so to speak, when Privado came in and did a scan?
Yeah, there are quite a few. Without naming, I can give some example. There was one company where we ran a scan and like discovered 35 parties. And the legal team saw it, like the privacy team saw it, and they're like, we have zero contracts with any of them. How do we have these third parties on our website? And then they saw the origination, all of them were through Xandr, right? Microsoft Xandr. So, and oh, then wow. I don't remember the exact number, but like some tens of third parties through Xandr. Yeah. With Xandr, they had a contract.
And they inject all these other third party.
And the privacy team never knew about it. So they never thought about it, never had that risk. Eventually, like, I think the web dev team was thinking about moving away from Xandr and the marketing team was. So this conversation accelerated that and they switched it off. But that's one example of this. Another example is like where a company did not have a reject button in their cookie banner in Europe. And so we flagged that as an issue. And then the privacy team, more on the operation side, actually went back to the legal team and said, hey, is this even an issue? And then they made the determination, this is an issue. So they changed the banner. So there are like, because there are small, small nuances across jurisdictions that apply. And then you need to run all these checks. And then someone has to internally validate it also, like sometimes. But yeah, you find these easy wins, which, you know, sometimes just, like make those conversations happen, which would have happened if a regulator or a litigation would have come in.
And I can imagine these days with a lot of failing compliances, it's like shooting fish in a barrel right now by doing a scan.
We also get some good companies with really good scan, like almost all clear on their main website.
Yeah.
So it's like their main website is 100% compliant, but they'll have like 10 subdomains all failing. So then they know, yeah, of course, we fixed the main one, but the subdomains is where we are not. And because maybe a third party developed it and they didn't know about, you know.
That's part of the challenge, I think. And I've seen this happen a lot, is that people see solutions like Google Tag Manager, which it was never meant to check for privacy. It's just kind of, it's a facilitator. And Google Consent came out. Companies might have hired of course, Google Consent is up for debate, but they would hire an agency to come into Google Tag Manager, configure Google Consent, but then set it and forget it. And then they need to add a new tag, but they'll forget it to add it to Google Consent.
Absolutely.
I mean, all these processes it's like Swiss cheese at times. But it's interesting you mentioned all the subdomains and you mentioned GDPR. So my question is, I mean, that's a huge level of complexity. You have one website. And I mentioned the mobile websites now, but you mentioned like all these subdomains, which might even be built by different companies or different agencies used as landing pages, maybe for certain products or departments within the company. But that offers a level of complexity, but so does legislation. How do you guys deal with the variations between all these legislations? You mentioned North America does it or at least America does it on a state level. CCPA, the West Virginia, I think they're
Colorado.
I think they're like 22 right now, 22 states. But then in Europe, you have GDPR, you have PDPL in Saudi Arabia. How do you guys work with the nuances between those legislations and how do you stay up to date with requirements?
Yeah, so that's a constant challenge for sure. The way we've built Privado is like across the board, all of our scanners are built to discover. And then we have a policy engine on top, which has all the rules, which is defined per state or per country, you know.
Oh, interesting.
That's simple, because basically the way we always thought about it is like, there is the ground truth on data, like what's happening, that never changes. So you always get that layer true. Like if you're sharing data with something, you're sharing data. Now, is that a risk or not depends on whose data it is, where country, what law applies. So we always separated it. So we have these scanners which are only responsible for discovering the source, the ground truth. And then we have a policy layer on top, which is completely configurable per geography, per jurisdiction, and per customer. They can like change the configuration, say, well, our risk team says this is not a concern, or our risk team is very risk averse. They don't want they want additional checks. Yeah. They can add more. So that's how we handle the complexity. There is always a challenge that you have to keep up to date. So we have a team that manages that on ingesting guidance per regulator. Because in Europe, you can get a guidance from a regulator, whereas in US, you have to also look at what was signed by an AG and what the laws are saying, which keeps changing. So it's a little bit of challenge in that sense, but the infrastructure is built in such a way that either our customers can force us to change if we are not listening, but generally our team is doing that job.
Yeah. But so going back kind of to MarTech in general, I mean, conversations that I've had with, especially when GDPR was enforced. It's quite some years ago now. I can't remember.
2018. So that's now 2018. Seven years now. 7 years in May.
Yeah. And I remember working late throughout the night, through a few nights leading up to May, to that date, May 18th, making sure that Google Tag Manager was probably set up for this brand that I was working for. We'd got everything right. No cookies were being triggered when a user came to the website. They had to not implicitly, but explicitly, that's the word I was looking for, accept before anything was tracked, which was according to the regulations. I think it was like 2 days later, I get a call saying, yeah, we're seeing some disappointing numbers in our advertising. Everything was being affected. And it took I think it took less than 24 hours for that call to come in and say, hey, can you revert everything that you've done? Because we're sailing blind. We're driving blind with advertising. We don't know what the performance level is. I have a certain level of empathy there as you're a business owner. I'm a business owner. You Absolutely. Use these platforms to acquire new clients. But to what extent do you feel that should there be more flexibility around privacy, especially around advertising? Or do you see other solutions that might work? Even Brian Clifton mentioned more contextual ads, kind of a return back to advertising on a contextual level. What are your thoughts about that? Where's the right balance?
Yeah, absolutely. I do feel like if the company is like stopped, if the business sense is removed, then like the company won't exist and then there is no relationship with the consumer. So absolutely, like, you know, you have to have attribution. You need to know your customer. I think the problem is like kind of these laws came in way after kind of when all this technology had already exploded and, you know, you had a lot of analytics tools built in without the thinking of privacy, which I feel gives opportunity to new MarTech entrants to actually build with privacy so they can actually do it. On the regulator side, I also feel they need to also rethink about some of these things. And, you know, I think the CNIL regulator has done some work there. They published a list of vendors which you can use on your website without consent for analytics, right? So that's, I can find out the link later and send you, but I definitely remember Adobe, one solution of Adobe being there. So I think that's a positive sign where regulators, you can like submit you have a privacy-focused MarTech technology which helps with analytics. Submit it to the regulator and the regulators can, you know, work around it and say, yeah, this is fine. Without consent, this is fine. And that's perfect for both the company because they get all the analytics, for the users because they don't have to compromise on privacy, and net positive because that will force all these large players to actually change their privacy practices. Because for them, data coming through all these websites, it's feeding into some engine and that's serving a larger purpose. But for the startup, it's not that. They're happy to sign a DPA saying, we will not use your data for advertising or whatever. So they have a direct business relationship versus a Google Analytics, which, you know, doesn't have a real direct relationship with any of the website. It's, you know, collecting data and then, you know, they can do whatever, but you can't have a contract with them on what they can and what they can't do.
Yeah. Oh, it's interesting you mentioned, because I did have a discussion with Otoscope a few weeks ago, and they had the cookieless, or at least the anonymous personalization just based on device data, which, I mean, it's legal to use. And then I had a follow-up discussion with someone else. He said, yeah, but there's also a cookieless tag management, Yentis, and there are, I think, 3 or 4 web analytics solutions now that work in the same manner. They're cookieless. Yeah, you're right. I mean, these legislations are opening up opportunities for new solutions, even Privado in that case. So it's, it's interesting to see, but I still feel that a lot of these ad platforms are struggling to, on the one hand, there is a lot of drive to keep their pool of people kind of closed. You need to use their tools to build out these audiences to be able to target people. But they try to come up, I just mentioned Google Consent Mode.
Yes.
Enhanced conversions. So you can do the server side with matching on any kind of PII data that you've had, but you're hashing it. And we all know that's ridiculous because it's a hash that you can just unhash. I mean, they need to do it to match.
Even if they don't, they can just match it, right? So
And, I mean, there's no level of security there. And I think even Facebook, I forgot what it was called, Facebook even came up with their own kind of tag management system.
They just did.
Yeah. And I mean, what are your thoughts about it? Are these companies trying to lead the way, or are they playing defense? Yeah, I've got my own thoughts, but I'll pick your brain over this one.
I feel for the big tech, if you are working in a company or as a user, I think having that context that you are skeptical that they will not use data is the right way to do, because they're big and there's no transparency, and they have definitely reused data in the past, and you know, all of that has happened. So I would say, and they have, like, you know, a lot of people working in privacy and lobbying and, you know, to get their products along. So I would say absolutely, like, having that skepticism towards big tech makes a lot of sense. And the opposite should also be true. Having more collaborative approach with new age MarTech companies, which are trying to come up with better privacy preserving methods, should be encouraged, because that's what will change. Once they start to lose their market share because of privacy, which they did with to Apple in some sense, they will feel the pain and they will have to change something. So that's my opinion. I'm always skeptical of data going into a big black box company, and then you don't know what's going to happen after that.
Yeah. Yeah. I even spoke to this with Brian Clifton. I kind of suggested the idea of a kind of two, should privacy be, a lot of people say that privacy should be a human right as much as kind of access to internet is. So should companies be supporting their citizens in protecting their privacy through, for instance, here in the Netherlands, we have an app where we can deal with the government, but we need to log in with specific credentials, and it's pretty tight. Should that be, in your opinion, and from what you've seen, should companies get involved with privacy? Should they offer up a platform that is linked to the individual, where the individual can control which data they want to share and with whom they want to share that data with? Or does this need to be kind of a free-for-all for companies to solve it instead of governments?
Yeah, I mean, there is, the way I think about it, it is a human right. That's why all these laws kind of got passed and, you know, got enforced. And then, so there's a law which is basically like, this is what you're supposed to do. And then you can, so there are two opportunities. One is, if you are a company which is trying to build a brand, which is going to deal with customers, you are treating security important, right? Because what happens, like, if the data goes out, right? The same thing happens if the user is unaware and, you know, you start to use the data in a certain way. For example, let's say if there's a cab company which uses the phone model or the battery to do the, you know, search pricing, right? You wouldn't expect that, you know, just not because, like, everyone is requesting it, just because your battery is going to die and you have 2% battery, and if they charge you twice, I mean, that's a bad consumer experience, because ideally that's when you need them the most, and you should have given them the cab at whatever the price was supposed to be, right? But you utilize my data without knowing, and you know, so that's where you lose that kind of trust. So I definitely think, yeah, so the role of a company is in their own. One is like using, making privacy as that, thinking of it as more of a trust thing. Then there is the role of other companies, because all these legislation have some way that you can assign some of your rights to another company. So that's another business model that startups take, where they manage your privacy on your behalf, where they can send deletion requests to data brokers on bulk, or, you know, in India, they have a interesting concept of a consent manager, which is like another entity which is also regulated, but manages consent for you on behalf of other companies. So I think, that's also an interesting B2C business model, where you have companies managing your privacy, and they are like, they have all the tools and they have integrated across all, and they can manage, you know, what an individual can't, and you can just pay them some money and they can do all of this for you as well. So I think that's another business model. But that should not be, that's a business model, but that should not be the only way. Of course, consumers should be able to directly work with the company, whoever they're dealing with, and directly get their privacy rights honored, or, you know, data on them exported.
To at least still have control over the data that they have stored with that company. It's funny that you mentioned India, because I recently discovered the ONDC, the Open Network Digital Commerce, I believe it was called. And I was like, I have so much to learn, because some of these ventures in India are so interesting, especially that you have these B2C companies now managing privacy for you. I really need to look into that. Hey, before we move to the end, two last questions. One is, do you use any form of ad blocking, or how do you protect your privacy?
Yeah, absolutely. I do use VPN pretty often. So that's one thing I definitely do. I also have Chrome extensions, both in terms of ad blocker, and also I have a GPC signal set on my browser, which means ideally if I'm visiting any website in US, they should respect my opt-out signal and not fire advertisers. So yeah, those things I definitely
do. A GPC signal?
It's basically a global privacy signal that was kind of introduced in California, saying like, hey, either the user can opt out or they can set a setting in the browser, which is like a signal to you. You remember back in the day, there used to be a TNT do not track signal that never got adopted.
Yeah, yeah. So that's an evolution of that?
Yeah, but it's mandated by law. So these state laws are moving to a universal opt-out mechanism where you can, as a user, set it once on a browser. And then every website has to read that and then actually respect it, right? So that's actually very easy for you as a user. That's and then they had there was a proposal to do it for mobile app as well, but that never went ahead. Maybe it will become live at some point of time.
Yeah, I think that would need to happen on the OS level, I believe, or
OS level. That's like an ATT signal or like a settings, you know, but they can mandate the OS provider to have something like that. But that didn't go through in California, but it's a possibility.
And funny, I just read a news article yesterday about France opening up litigation against Apple for around ATT and unfair practices that they are still collecting data, but they won't allow others to share data if people opt out. It's such a crazy world. But listen, hey, one last question. I hope you have your glass ball in front of you. And if we look into the future, 5 to 10 years, we've seen how MarTech has advanced. Recently, we saw how a CDP got merged with a headless CMS, you know, the Lytics and Content Stack acquisition. Is something like Privado going to be a part of a larger ecosystem by default in, let's say, 5 to 10 years, where privacy is everything that you're doing now is just going to kind of be an option of a DXP, of digital experience platform? What are your views around that?
Yeah, I mean, it could happen for sure. I mean, like, we've seen that in security as well, where these large providers, you know, end up opening up, building up like some security feature. So I think that will be a welcome change if some of these CDPs try to do it and, you know, at least add some privacy into it.
A whitelist Privado.
Yeah, whitelist Privado work with us for sure. But my like kind of prediction is, I do think marketing is critical for a company to succeed, and so is privacy. Privacy will become an integral part, something which runs in the background always and not in an ad hoc fashion in marketing flows. And as marketing teams onboard new people or onboard new technology, as they make some mistakes around privacy, they will get alerted, they will fix it, and they will confidently market, get more users, make more money for the company, but without compromising user privacy. I think that's where overall everything has moved as we have democratized basically knowledge work, right? Like your engineers building more code. So you had security issues and trust issues and whatever quality issues. The same is happening in marketing. You have data quality issues, you have data privacy issues. You also have data security issues in that sense. So I think as we democratize more with generative AI, with more tools, with more type of power to more people in the company versus fewer people in the company, you will need guardrail like technologies like Privado for privacy and other type of things as well, which will help marketers and enable them to do safe marketing even more.
Yeah, without losing sleep at night.
worrying
why there's somebody knocking on the door looking for 4% of their annual revenue. Thank you so much for your time today. It's been really great talking to you. And I mean, I've never had a discussion around privacy. I've learned a whole new stack of terms today. I'm going to look into this. What was it? Sorry, the GC.
GPC signal.
GPC, sorry, yeah.
Yep.
I'm going to have a look at that one and see what kind of effect it has on when I do some of my debugging. Thanks again, and have a great day in Brooklyn, and I'll see you around on LinkedIn.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Bye.